Good morning, and welcome to Lopes on Movies. My name is Joey Lopes, and today I am joined by the one, the only, the incomparable Kyle.
Hey, everyone.
And Connor.
I guess I'm not incomparable, but...
Well, I'm sorry. I would have given you a more exciting intro. The sound that Kyle made when he was introduced distracted me, and then I got all thrown off. I mean, my understanding, Kyle, is that you have, like, your throat's a little sore, so you've been kind of, like...
a little tender, you know.
Popping some cough drops here and there, you know. Mm-hmm. Little Halls, maybe? Or Ludens? Is that what you're...
I'm a Halls guy. I don't like any of that Ludens crap.
Well, you
Ludens
need that...
is just, like, candy.
You need the menthol, you know? That's because that gets you, like... You know, I don't know if it does anything, but it sure feels like it does something. You know.
See, but I won't go the whole way and get like Ricola because that just like burns my throat.
Mm. Yeah, sure, I understand.
Like Halls is a happy medium, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I remember when I was a kid taking Halls, always like it took me a while to build up the ability to suffer a Halls, but now it's like nothing. Now you know, you take one of those things and it's like you don't even feel it.
You're a man now.
Yeah. I don't know. I used to like. I was addicted to those like cherry Halls, like the red ones.
Yep.
You know, like
so this is
a
good intro
all the time. What? You don't think this is interesting? I think this is interesting. People are like nobody talks about cough drops, and I think the people are interested.
Okay.
Oh man. Now I'm all bent out of shape. How can I start this episode now that I'm all off?
All right, just start thinking about the movie we're going to talk about, and then you'll be excited again. You'll be ready.
Oh, that's totally true. Because I mean, what a movie! Am I right? You know, it's so great to be back in the theaters. You know, I actually went to the movies. You know, I've been talking about this for weeks about how I haven't gone to the movies. Then finally, you know, me and Kyle were like, it's time to go back to the movies.
Yeah.
And you know, what better movie to see than Barbie, which I did not see. But Connor, you just saw that, right? Didn't you?
Like, I did.
Literally just come home from seeing Barbie?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I just got back.
All right, we're not going to talk about that today because me and Kyle haven't seen it. Or at least I don't think Kyle has seen it.
I've not seen it.
Okay. Are you going to see it? Like, I
don't know if I'll see it in the next week, but I probably will see it at some point.
Yeah, for sure. But Connor, I'll just give me your, like, you know, super quick rundown what you thought about Barbie.
Heavy-handed messaging. Well done. Certainly, like, spectacle-wise, Ryan Gosling is hilarious in it.
He's a funny guy, that Ryan Gosling. He's a very funny guy.
Yeah, but not bad.
Okay. Well, that's our Barbie discourse for forever, and now we'll never talk about it again. Because
no,
we have a much more important movie to talk about.
Yeah. Mm.
Which is, of course... the third in the series of Hercule Poirot films from the famed director and actor Kenneth Branagh. A Haunting in Venice.
Ooh.
Ghosts. Specters. You know, that kind of thing. I don't know why, like, those other two Kenneth Branagh Poirot movies, which, of course, like, Hercule Poirot, we've talked about this character before. He's a super famous detective character. Most people probably, if they don't know the name, they've heard probably of Murder on the Orient Express, the Agatha Christie novel. Hercule Poirot was her, like, series character. So she wrote a ton of books with that character as the lead detective solving murders, usually murder mysteries, where you're trying to figure out, you know, who done it, who's the culprit. So this is another adaptation of one of those. And yeah, Kenneth Branagh has made three of these now. And those first two, he did Murder on the Orient Express, which, Kyle, you told me you saw, and you said it was all right, right?
Yeah, it was perfectly fine.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I didn't see that one either. Then there was Death on the Nile, which I feel like that one kind of landed with a big thud, because that was like, I guess it was sort of a like immediately post-pandemic movie. It got delayed a ton. Like
it also didn't help that like it couldn't have picked a worse time to have people like Armie Hammer and Gal Gadot movie. It was a bad timing film.
Yeah, well, that was the McGregor on the cannibal accusations for Armie Hammer, which, you know, incredible times in movie history.
And I think the Black Panther actress who's like anti-vaccine is in it too.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that at the time, and I'm not sure if that really, like, if that was totally legit or not totally legit, but there was like, there was controversy. Let's put it that way.
The PR wasn't good.
Yeah.
And
but beyond that, the movie looked really garbage.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about the acting.
What?
Like Gal Gadot's acting, is that what you're talking
about? Well, I mean, yeah, Gal Gadot's acting. I mean,
well, everybody was making fun of that trailer where she's like, she talks about enough champagne to fill the Nile.
Yeah, well, the thing, I did see it, and I you know, I thought it was fine, you know.
I think the main thing that turned me off from it was that I just thought it looked really bad. Like, you just had that, like, CGI Egypt behind you. Yeah, I was like, oh, man. But
there's certainly a lot of that with these movies. I kind of got I didn't see Murder on the Orient Express, but I kind of got a vibe of that.
Yeah.
On like those. And this one, to some extent, but I think this one is a little better in terms of that quality, but we'll get
into that's one of the things I wanted to say, where it's like, I wouldn't have had any interest in seeing this except for, like, for some reason, I, you know how, like, things that you goof on that you normally would have no interest in, after it's been a long enough time, it suddenly, you find it endearing. So, like, after goofing on these Poirot movies for, like, years with the Murder on the Orient Express and then Death on the Nile, when this one comes out, it's like, he's still making them? He's not giving up? All right. You know what? I applaud you. I'll see your third one. You know, you got me now. But the other thing was, like, all of the, like, just generally speaking, I didn't hear much bad things about this one. And most of the people that I saw talking about it talked about it fairly fondly, which was surprising because that's not the impression I got from the other two. So I was like, all right, maybe this is actually going to be kind of good. You know, who knows? So I was this was a perfect opportunity to go back to the movies to see this this murder mystery. You know, murder mysteries are all the rage now. With, you know, you got Glass Onion, you got I don't know any others. I don't think there's any others. But but hey, maybe we can start a trend here. You know, we've talked about our genius Glass Onion Poirot crossover film idea.
It has to happen.
You know, like, I think there's potential here. But anyway, how about we talk about this Haunting in Venice? Kyle, give us the synopsis.
A Haunting in Venice. In a post-World War II Venice, Poirot, now retired and living in his own exile, reluctantly attends a seance. But one of the guests is murdered. Is up to the former detective to once again uncover the killer.
Wow, that's like that's one of the best synopses I've ever heard from IMDb.
Yeah,
no, that's actually that one's great.
It's pretty good. Yeah,
it actually tells you like what's going on, which is
it's very, very accurate. Yeah. I'm just shocked. Anyway, you continue.
Anyway, directed by Kenneth Branagh, of course. Also starring Kenneth Branagh, Michelle Yao, Jamie Dornan, Tina Fey, Kelly Riley, a whole bunch of people. You know, it's one of these movies. They just have a lot of cast members.
I will say, at least for this one, like, it didn't feel like a cast of just a bunch of super big celebrities that, like, you recognize all of them as, like these massive people that can kind of get distracting. Like, I feel like it's more like real actors. Like,
the only one that's a little distracting is Tina Fey, just because it's
Tina Fey. Yeah, but... you know, we talk about that if that's a problem that anybody.
No, I don't know if it's a problem, but it's a little bit. It takes you out of it a little bit, but I think that's kind of part of the fun of these movies a little bit, that they're not overly serious, if that makes sense. They're kind of like silly and campy a little bit. I think that's part of the charm to them. Like, I'm kind of with you, Joey, that I'm like won over by these, and part of it is that you can clearly tell that Kenneth Branagh just loves playing Hercule Poirot.
Oh, like, yeah. This is purely a passion situation. Like, he just loves making these things. This is all power to him.
Remember that scene in La La Land, Kyle? Sorry, bringing this up. Where she's talking, Emma Stone is talking to Ryan Gosling and bringing up how, you know, it's just like your passion will make them want to go. And he's like, ah, not in my experience. Well, in this one, it's almost the passion of Kenneth Branagh and this guy, Michael Green, who has written all these movies, mm-hmm. is almost like making these good for me.
Well, that's like, what I said. It's saying. Like after enough time, something that's annoying and you think is lame just by virtue of existing for so long and the force of will. I'm like, all right, I'm into it now.
But
why
isn't
not?
It nice to see something that clearly they like care about and they like to do, even if it's like silly and kind of goofy?
Sure, why not? I mean,
yeah,
all right.
I mean, that's where I'm at.
Based on what I'm hearing, it seems like you enjoyed this quite a bit, Connor.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was totally fun.
Is that your review? You thought it was fun? Is that as
no,
all
I mean,
you have to say?
I thought it was good. I mean, like, I think it was... I like the clichéness of it where he's in retirement.
Yeah, that was really funny.
There's like a case that has to bring. I mean, let's be serious. Like I'm like half laughing through like a lot of it because it's so goofy and like over the top. Mm-hmm. But I think it won me over in that that kind of goofiness of it. And like Kenneth Branagh's acting with the accent that he's putting on to be Perot.
Yeah, ridiculous
like,
accent. Yeah.
You can tell he thinks it's fun. And the mustache that's just so crazy.
I love
like,
the mustache.
Yeah, the mustache is great. Everybody loves the mustache. I mean, where are you at with this one, Kyle?
I don't have an opinion on this.
You don't have an opinion? What does that mean?
By that, I mean, I can't really say I liked it, but I also don't think I hated it. It was just kind of a thing that I watched.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my review.
So you're in the camp of like, you know, that's just an average movie, you know, nothing special,
like,
whatever.
Like when the movie finally ended, I was like, oh, you know, okay,
that was fun.
That was something.
If you didn't like that ending, I don't know. I was like,
well, the very end, we were popping off, of course.
I mean, everyone got out of their seats and started clapping.
Yeah,
like,
right.
How could you not? The end of that movie, I'm like, that's right, Hercule Poirot is back. And I'm like, I don't even know what this movie, I don't know anything about this character, but somehow it got me doing that. Like,
he's back, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I guess like, I'm kind of in the middle. I liked it. I think the thing I liked the most about it was, I guess, kind of the production design. Like the setting is very good, and I think that's the thing that like those other ones, the Death on the Nile, for example, just kind of looked so ugly because it had those CGI backgrounds and just like felt very chintzy and phony. This one doesn't. Like the sets are really good, and I think there's probably like a couple of like amplified CGI exteriors, especially at like some of those night scenes. But like the actual interior space is really good. And the atmosphere is like, it's pretty like somber in a weird way. Like, I feel like it probably has a lot to do with the fact that the whole thing surrounds a seance and like somebody trying to speak to the dead. But you also have Hercule Poirot, who's kind of like, he's getting older and, you know, he's feeling like he doesn't want to do this anymore. And he himself is having like these internal struggles about himself and his kind of past and his experiences, seeing a lot of pain and death. So there's this kind of weird, like, unexpected bit of somberness to the whole thing, especially early on when you're going through the party. And the party just it feels like a horrible time. Like, it's just, but not in, like, it's a bad party way, but just because the setting is so oppressive and, like dark.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that if there's anything that disappoints me about it, it's that I think the mystery is not very good.
I think that's one of my issues.
Yeah, like and it's not so much that, like, I'm not going to say that it's a totally bad mystery. I just think that the way that the information is doled out makes I think the killer is really obvious very early. And like you're thinking about it throughout the movie, but like, just the way that they do certain tells is so like kind of on the nose, I feel like. And I was kind of like thinking of it that way. But the other thing is, like, obviously that's something that Raymond Chandler said that we talked about, where it's like, you know, a good mystery story or a good detective story is one that you enjoy even if you don't know the ending. And I don't think this is that, because this is very clearly a whodunit. This is very clearly building up to the moment of knowing who did it. So the fact that, like, you can kind of know pretty early and the answer is not that interesting kind of deflates the thing a little bit, especially because so much of the movie is these interrogation scenes, right? So you're just like having him interrogate all these characters and learning so much like detail about their backstory, even though I don't think the mystery itself is that complicated or that clever. It's just kind of like, you know, it involves things that I think are like very easy cop outs. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but like, I don't know if you guys know what I mean, if I'm making sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I think I'm a little bit more on the side of, I still enjoyed it, even though I kind of did figure it all out kind of early, but I still like the, you know, the, what you're talking about, like where Perro is like struggling with his, what's going on around him, and he has issues with his own faith, and he's kind of like also you know, having just issues with his past and all the things that he's seen, and that's kind of tied in and woven into him trying to solve the story. So that kind of kept me engaged more. There's some character stuff that's good too, like even though you kind of have an idea where it's going, there's some like the reveals of certain things that are happening with all the characters, because they try to do it in a way that it's like you know, not that anyone could potentially be a part of it, I guess, or could have done it. So I do think it's interesting that this is not like the other two Kenneth Branagh Perro movies were already made into movies before, right? And this one is the first time that they didn't do that. So there's no other movie for A Haunting in Venice. I think it's based on some, I can't remember what it's called. It might have been some like Halloween kind of movie or something. I can't
called like Halloween Night or something.
It might be something like that.
Halloween Party or something.
Yeah, Halloween Party. That might be it. From Christie. But so this is like their first adaptation of it. And maybe this is not the strongest work, like in general, because I'm sure the story is just what it is. But in terms of the production and the cast, and the way it looks and the way it's shot, I thought it was good.
No, the setting is great. I mean, like that great period Venice setting is so cool. Like, you know, like I love the storm and like the water and like all that stuff. I think is great. I just thought of something. You remember how this movie opens with like that bird attacking another bird?
Yeah,
I think that's kind of what I'm talking about with like the somber tone thing. It's like that happens. It's like this kind of jump scare, and then Poirot wakes up in the middle of the night, like in like a sweat. Like the guy is troubled, you know. Like, this is a troubled guy.
But that's kind of part of the point of this.
Oh yeah, of
right?
course.
Especially
the way
you get to the end. Also, is like, you know, that I think it really fits. I mean,
it's good.
I think
it's good.
I was like fairly like. I guess I went in with fairly low expectations because I did see the Death on the Nile movie with all the, you know, champagne to fill the Nile, you know. I was expecting that kind of thing, a lot of it. But so for it to be more competently put together and, you know, to see, you know, Kenneth Branagh's total commitment to this character, you know, won me over.
Yeah, I guess I understand that. Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I liked it. It was definitely good. I don't think that I'm like totally on the Kenneth Branagh Poirot train. Like, I'm not sitting here being like, I can't wait for the next one. Like, the sign me up. Like, I'll probably see it. Like, it's kind of like I'll check that out. But I think the impression I was getting from some of the impressions I had read on like Twitter and just various other places that this was like a real surprise. And I didn't feel like it was a real surprise, you know? Like, I think it's probably better than the other two, and it's good in a lot of like cool ways, but there's a lot of things about it that are just kind of like average also, you know? So I'm in the middle, but I liked it. You know, I definitely can't say I didn't like it. It was a worthwhile time going to the movies. One thing I do want to say, though, because me and Kyle have a very important review to do, not of the movie, but of the theater experience that we both had, because we both decided to see this in Cinemark XD.
I don't even know what that is.
So there's a super like fancy big digital cinema theater called the XD theater. You pay a couple more dollars to see a movie in the XD theater. And this whole time I was like, I want to know, like, what does this mean? Like, how much better is the movie experience seeing it in an XD theater? And this movie is playing there? Like, that's crazy. You know, usually it's only like the super, super big movies. So seeing this there, I was like, all right, this is the perfect opportunity. You know, let's go see an XD movie and like get the full experience. So so Kyle, what did you think of the XD movie experience?
I think I'd rather save a few bucks and have less buttons on my seat.
What is that even? What does that mean?
Well, let me tell you the two things I noticed that are different about the XD theater compared to the normal Cinemark theater. So the first thing, the screen, it's a little bigger. The second thing, the chairs, a couple more buttons to control the reclining. You can control the head part, and you can control the legs part. Yeah,
okay. I'll be honest, I found the seats a lot less comfortable.
Well, it was annoying, like trying to figure out how to like configure the chair, whereas like the other ones that just have the one button, it's like you're not thinking about it. It's not a job, you know. But all these extra buttons don't make it better for me.
And they don't really do anything. It's just like you just get to move your legs and your head like differently.
Like I can't imagine why you would want to do that. Like there's really only one comfortable position once you recline. Like you're not gonna like how much control do you need? Is that worth like the extra $5 or whatever?
It took me longer to get to like my like optimal comfort spot than it normally would have.
All right, wait. So the chair is a little bit fancier. It has a bunch of buttons for adjusting, and the screen yes. might be a tiny bit bigger. Is that it? How about the sound? Like, is that what this is?
The sound, the jury's still out. It might be louder. I don't think it's louder. It wasn't louder. There was nothing louder about it. But I did notice the surround sound more than I usually do, maybe. There's a couple parts of this where there's like a creepy voice in the background.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I definitely heard it like behind me and all around me and all that stuff. And I've probably had that experience in other movie theaters before. So I don't know if this is really like, I don't want to credit the XD theater with having acceptable surround sound. I don't think that's really, that should be a pretty easy bar to climb. If anybody has any other things that are different about this theater that we didn't notice, by all means, please email us. You know, get in touch with us. Let us know what are we missing here.
I will say that the surround sound did get me a little bit. The first time, like, there's a spooky talking, I was like, what was that?
What was that noise? Yeah.
Yeah, so it did get me a little bit. I think I'd still rather pay less money, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's worth the upcharge. No. I'll be honest with you. But the entrance to it is very exciting. Like you feel like you're walking into like cool. a really cool, you know, like situation. You know, it's got like a whole, it's like a whole marquee above it. It's almost like a theater inside a theater, you know, if you know what I mean. Like it's a very cool experience walking into the XD theater. But it's the actual movie experience of the XD theater that I wouldn't say leaves something to be desired because it's just seeing a movie, but it's also just seeing a movie with a couple more buttons on your recliner.
Okay.
So yeah, I would not recommend the XD experience for the sake of it. If it's the only time you can go see the movie, then, you know, what can you do? You'll pay the extra couple bucks. But, you know, other than that, save your money.
What did you guys think of the Belfast reunion in this movie?
Who's in Belfast that was in this? I didn't
Wait, was
see
it the
Belfast.
Kid?
Jamie Dornan and the kid. Yeah,
really? The kid was also in Belfast?
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That was.
Wow.
Jude Hill, not Jude Law. What?
Jude Hill. Law's, you know, Jude Law.
Yeah. But yeah, they were all in Belfast together. You know, that Kenneth Branagh directed. Mm-hmm, so, you know, they probably all, you know, it was like getting the band back together.
Yeah, it was like getting the band back together. Wow.
Well, they're
Tina
part
Faye
of Branagh's
and an
bunch.
Oscar winner.
Who is the Oscar winner?
Michelle Yeoh.
Oh, right. Duh. That was like just last year.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty good. You know, is there anything else to say about this? I'm kind of like, you're kind of at a loss here. I feel like we've kind of discussed the gist of it. I mean, did you find Tina Fey distracting? I've seen people say that Tina Fey was distracting. I was kind of like, I could take it or leave it. It didn't really bother me that much.
A little bit, but I kind of think, like I was saying, for this kind of thing, I think the over-the-topness is fine.
Okay.
I kind of appreciate that they are a little, like, tongue-in-cheek with a lot of it, especially the ending. That's when you know that it's, like, so, you know, they're not taking it too seriously.
And well, it's worth it for the ending alone. Like, the ending is so hype, is so unbelievably exciting.
Absolutely.
You know, you'll get up and start clapping, you'll start cheering, you're hooting and hollering. Like, it's probably the most hype I've ever been in a movie theater in my life.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, maybe I'm going a little far here. I don't want you guys to be disappointed.
No, it is very good though. But I like these movies. Like, I think I wish there was more kind of just things like this. Maybe, you know, that were like passion project kind of things that are just kind of fun. I like that.
I think it's about time for the next one that he takes the Poirot character and does a totally original story, not based on, you know, anything previous. It doesn't have to be the Knives Out, Glass Onion crossover film, but that's not a bad idea. If you're interested, Hollywood, please, you know, send me an email.
I still think that that's that's where this needs to go at some point. Especially
the only thing I'll say about that, though, is that I was expecting this movie to be a lot dumber in tone than it was, because I think that even though it is kind of corny, it did sort of take itself seriously in a way that was nice.
I gotta tell you, the fact that it thread that needle, you know?
Yeah,
like,
it did.
Just, it was perfect.
It did, but the problem now is that I can't imagine them actually doing the Knives Out crossover because it's too stupid, and like I feel like Branagh maybe has too much pride to be willing to stoop to such a stupid level. Even though these movies are goofy, but like they're goofy in a sophisticated way, if that makes sense. Whereas the Knives Out crossover idea is just stupid.
He's doing a totally over the top accent voice.
I know, but if you asked him about it, he would be dead serious. You know it. You know that he would not have any humor about it whatsoever. You'd be like, yes, I am playing this character, and I care about this character, and I am passionate about this character, and I will not sully the name of this character by having him team up with Daniel Craig across 75 years of mystery.
Come on, it's too good, though.
I know it's a brilliant idea.
They can't solve the case with the technology. They need the future.
Oh man, it's so brilliant that it keeps me up at night sometimes thinking about it. But I haven't cracked how the story exactly works yet. Like, I know that there's got to be like flashbacks and going back and forth between the two time periods, where you have the case that Hercule Poirot could never solve, but he knew that the next greatest detective would be able to solve it in, let's say, 75 years, whatever it was. And then he left the clues for the you know, Daniel Craig character to find. And I don't know, like there's something there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's got to start in the Poirot time, you know, so it's like post World War II or something.
It could be either, really.
Like just out. Yeah, I don't know. I think you set it up because the mystery has to be solved, you know, in the present. Or if you try to do it in a weird way where it's kind of solved at the same time in both time periods, you would have to have
a scene where like Poirot after he does his final thing, or maybe even on his deathbed, like he just thinks to himself, and he internally, he knows the case was solved in the future. Like, you don't know why he knows, but like, he just knows, like it's in his heart. He knows.
Here's what happens.
Smiles and dies or something. I don't know.
The next Poirot movie, he dies at the end. Credits start rolling halfway through. Says 75 years later, Daniel Craig's looking through some files and he's like, and what's this? And then it's like, to be continued in Knives Out, the Poirot story.
And with that, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Lopes on Movies. We will see you next week for hopefully another movie.